And this is a justice song. It's meant to be sung with force.
Peace, shalom, shalom.
Interesting how that happens.
Peace, shalom, shalom.
In Ferguson.
Peace, shalom, shalom.
In Chirac.
Peace, shalom, shalom.
In New York. In Riyadh, keep going for justice.
Peace, shalom, shalom
in San Bernardino.
Peace, shalom,
in Syria.
Peace, shalom,
in Iraq.
Peace, shalom,
keep going. In Paris, peace, shalom, shalom. Peace, shalom, shalom for one another. Peace, shalom, shalom. Peace, shalom, shalom. May it be so. Please be seated.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Mary Johnson, and I welcome you into this house of hope. This place where we are reminded that we are not alone. This place where we are reminded that what we do matters. This place where we offer gratitude and kindness in every expression. Welcome to this house of hope where we say yes in the face of great struggle. Here we have hope, for none of us are perfect, and there is no such thing as done. Yet there is enough and hope for all to come. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of the gray hymnals and place a card in the offering plate or give it to an usher, and we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months, which will give you information about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We are glad you are here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4, out this door and then to the left. Please ask an usher if you need help finding the nursery. In the front of our sanctuary, we have the Spirit Chair, which includes activities for all ages. You are invited to go to the Spirit Chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. I have a few announcements. From November 30th through December 23rd, we will be collecting new or lightly used stuffed animals for the kids at the fourth Saturday lunch. And this is from Isabella, back there. Joy writes, "The Oasis Center has provided us with a family to help this Christmas. The information is on the buffet table. Please take a look and sign up to provide something." And this is from me. Thanks to the financial support from several people and the sewing effort by Nancy Kniff, we now have new valances in the worker room windows. The strings of paper cranes are available for you to take home. Please take as many as you want.
Good morning. My name is Sunshine Jeremiah Wolf. I am the interim minister here at the First Unitarian Church of Alton. That means that I'm here on a temporary contract serving this congregation while it searches for its next settled minister. If you're a member of the search committee, can you stand up, please? Mary and Phil are here. If you have questions or feedback about our next incoming minister, please speak to these folks, and please thank them for their service. It is no small duty. I will be here until July serving this congregation, which is my privilege. I love doing this work. Do want to reiterate that we do have our Family for Oasis project. If you are interested in providing presents, no more than $30 for a present. They are listed on the bulletin board, which is on the counter in there. Please put your name and how we can contact you next to the items you wish to provide. And if you don't wish to provide items, you can provide money, and we will go and purchase the gifts with that money. If you have any questions, just please let me or Joy know. Vespers, we had our last Vesper service for this year yesterday. We will continue Vespers on January 10th. We seem to have a small, strong following of folks who liked attending it, and I do encourage you to speak with them about that service and what it means for them. We have a number of holiday services this year. December 20th will be our Christmas pageant. We need donkeys and wise people and Mary and Joseph and everything you can imagine. You don't have to come to a rehearsal or do anything special. Just show up on December 20th and we will have it ready for you. And please be sure to thank Ron Glossop for being our narrator on that day. It'll be a lot of fun. On December 21st, Monday at 7 p.m., we will have our winter solstice service. This will be in the worker room and will include dance, calling the directions, story, and song. It is a service for all ages. December 24th will be our Christmas Eve service at 9 o'clock p.m. and is also a service for all ages. On the 20th, after worship, we will have a party, which will include games and dessert and a white exchange gift, white elephant gift exchange. Items should be no more than $2 or should be homemade, and we will have a children and youth present and adult presents. And this is not the version where you steal it. Once you get a gift, it's yours, so we're not going to do any of that, so just be aware. And so if you want to participate in that, please bring a gift of $2 or less. After service today, we will be visited by Reverend Bill Sasso, who is a retired minister in Carbondale, Illinois. He's representing the Unitarian Universalist Advocacy Network, Illinois, and he's coming to ask this congregation about what is important to them around policy and justice work in Illinois. So if you're interested in that, please join us in Emerson Place after the service. And finally, thanks to the hard work of Mary Johnson and the board and numerous others, we will be painting this sanctuary the first couple of weeks of January, and that is great news. It is no small expense. It is coming out of the Capitol campaign, and it also is no small use of this space. So we will be having worship in the worker room for those couple of weeks, and there will be a lot of need to move things around. So if you're interested in helping us get the room ready for that day, please let me know. And with that, that concludes our many, many wonderful announcements. We begin this morning with a prelude.
Our call to worship this morning is a responsive reading written by Reverend Mark Ward, and it's up on the wall there. So please join in when it says all. As chill winds blast the last autumn leaves from the trees, we gather with new purpose.
In each other's company, we find warmth against the approach of winter's cold.
We look to the bounty of harvest to sustain us while the earth sleeps, and we attend again to the wider circles of relationship, reminded of the connections on which we depend.
In each day,
there is cause for gratitude, for the love we share, even if imperfect and not always fully realized. Every day of our journeys, we are given new opportunities to accept and to give love.
As Joy lights our chalice this morning, I invite you to join in the words and the hand motions for our chalice lighting. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. I invite you now to please rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us. As I share with you one of my favorite stories of all time, this is in my top five easily, I want you to think about where hope is in the story. It might be hard to see at first, but where is our hope? Our story today is called June 29th, 1999 by David Wiesner. The place is Hohokam, New Jersey. The year is 1999. On May 11th, after months of careful research and planning, Holly Evans launches vegetable seedlings into the sky. On May 18th, the young scientist reports on her experiment. Holly intends to study the effects of extraterrestrial conditions on vegetable growth and development. She expects the seedlings to stay aloft for several weeks before returning to the earth. Her classmates are speechless. The date is June 29th. Shortly after sunrise, a member of the Billings, Montana Moose Lodge, hiking through the Rocky Mountains, makes a startling discovery. Robert Bernabe is in a daze when he returns to camp, and all he can say for the next several hours is, "Turnips! Turnips!" All over the country, the skies fill with vegetables. Cucumbers circle Kalamazoo. Lima beans loom over Levittown. Artichokes advance on Anchorage. Parsnips pass by Providence. And broccoli lands with a big bounce in Holly Evans' backyard. I want a big stalk of broccoli in my backyard. In Ottumwa, Iowa, Tony Kramer emerges from his barn and shouts for joy, "At last, the blue ribbon at the state fair is mine!" And the rabbits are in for a good meal. By mid-afternoon, all vegetables float safely to the ground. Except for the peppers. For some reason, they need a little help. TV news channels broadcast 24-hour coverage of the airborne vegetal event. Cauliflower carpets California, spinach blankets Greenwich, and arugula covers Ashtabula. Holly is puzzled. Arugula is not a part of her experiment. Vegetables become very big business. Peas from Peoria are shipped down the Mississippi to Mobile in exchange for eggplant. You imagine seeing the peas going down our river here? Real estate booms in North Carolina. Gourd estates. And avocados bolster Vermont's economy. Potato land is wisely abandoned. You can see little bits of mold on the potatoes. And the Big Apple is renamed the Big Rutabaga. Arugula, eggplant, avocado, and now rutabaga? As the list of vegetables that Holly did not plant grows longer, she concludes that the giant specimens are not the results of her experiment. More curious than disappointed, Holly asks herself, "What happened to my vegetables? And whose broccoli is in my backyard?" The place is the ionosphere. On June 29th, the Arcturian star cruiser, Alula Borealis, was touring its sixth planet in 4 days, and the captain had just pointed out the fjords of Norway off the port side. In the galley, an assistant fry cook accidentally jettisoned the entire food supply, and their vegetables drifted toward the small blue planet below. Everyone on board had the same thought. Where would their supper come from? Where does their supper come from? What are those? Those are Holly's experimental vegetables, aren't they? She sent her vegetables up and they got to eat. Yeah? What? They floated. Okay, so here's one of the things about stories like this. You have to be able to suspend your disbelief. There is no way in which, in the future, vegetables will literally fall from a spaceship. At least I hope. And in fact, vegetables falling from a spaceship or going up into the sky is not the point of the story. What's the point of the story?
Vegetables.
Vegetables is a very good point of the story. I saw somebody's hand back there. Isabella? I can't hear you back there. She hoped that the vegetables would grow, but they didn't, did they? Well, I mean, they grew, but not to the size of Peoria or St. Louis. Really curious what fell in St. Louis. But that's squash. Squash landed in St. Louis. So here's the thing about this story and about hope. We cannot plan for the things that we hope for. There is no checklist. There is no planning or date or five-year plan for hopefulness. In many ways, the most hopeful things that happen in our lives are accidental, and they happen because of relationships, because that interdependent web is so much bigger than we are, right? There was nothing bigger than the interdependent web between some aliens cruising, checking out the fjords, and a class somewhere in America trying out an experiment. We cannot plan for the things that we hope for. And in fact, some of the most hopeful things that have happened in our lives happen because of accidents. Probably one of the most hopeful things, I'm allergic to it, but it helps a lot of people, is penicillin. Penicillin started as an experiment, and it was a failed experiment. Mold showed up in a container it was not supposed to be in. There was no scientific plan for fungus showing up in the experiment. But because of that mistake, because of what was not planned, people find healing and wholeness. How many of you have taken penicillin and felt better? You can thank fungus, right? And somebody who paid attention when their experiment didn't go the way they planned, right? The Big Bang Theory. The Big Bang Theory, right? The origin of our universe was an accident. We picked up some chatter and had to figure out where this radioactive stuff was coming from. And boom, we have the theory of the universe. One of my favorites, Velcro. Velcro, right. Guy was walking through the woods and realized that there were birds sticking to his pants and to his dog. And he realized that there was a way that they stuck, and he was able to recreate it, and it became Velcro. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm walking through the woods and I get burrs stuck in my legs, the last thing I think of is an opportunity. But here this guy turned an opportunity into something hopeful, into something possible, into something useful. Hope is not something we can plan for. And in fact, it requires us to be willing to fall flat on our face over and over and over again. How many of you like to fall flat on your face? Ben and Alex? Yes. Arthur?
Yes, I do, because I know that it's going to teach me something to where I'll do better.
Absolutely. Well, but the truth is, whether it's literal or metaphorical, there is an attitude in which we take the failures, the things that don't go right, the things that don't go perfectly, as a learning experience. And the people who tend to be most happy and successful in life are those who recognize mistakes not as a problem to be fixed, but as an experience to learn from, to grow from, to create an opportunity from. Our most successful business people this day and age will tell you, you have to fail multiple times before you can be successful in business. Now, I have a hard time imagining that, because all I can hear is dollar signs, right? That is not my hope-filled world. We all have ways in which we struggle with that. But I do want to share somebody who literally falls for a living. I want to thank Sandy for sharing this story with me. This is from Brett Anthony Johnson. He's a skateboarder. How many of you skateboard? How many of you fallen while skateboarding? That, for me, was about the end of skateboarding. But what I figured out from reading this is I failed to learn the lesson of skateboarding. This is what he says. I've skateboarded for 30 years, and one of the best-kept secrets about the sport is that most falls do not hurt. Learning to skate is in fact tantamount to learning to fall. My most punishing falls happen precisely when I'm trying not to fall. The issue isn't that excessive caution is dangerous on a skateboard. It's that timidity is almost as dangerous as recklessness. That means being shy is almost as dangerous as just being completely paying no attention to what's going on, right? The trick is to reach a detente with falling, to accept inevitability while refusing to see it as a setback. And yet I remember curling up at the bottom of the ramp and experiencing a flash of delirious clarity. For the first time and with idealistic vision comes from the soul-wrenching experience, exhaustion of a 6-hour skating session. Can you imagine 6 hours of skating and falling? I understood that every trick brings with it a certain number of falls. The number is different for every trick and for every skater. But if we can just outlast the stretch of falling, then we'll ride away clean. For skaters, and maybe for everyone, falling is an investment, a means of gathering information, its own kind of promise. The epiphany after this particular fall was spectacularly rousing. As I climbed to the top of the ramp, knowing I'd nailed the trick before night's end. After 10 minutes, I fell so hard I couldn't skate for a week. But 4 months later, I finally landed the trick. Here's what he learned. What you can't see until later is that falling has been, at once, the road and the map. It's the failures that we learn from. And for me, there's a lot of hope in that. Because it means every time I'm like, man, I didn't do that right. I can treat it as a learning opportunity, or I can treat it as I'm a terrible person or bad at what I do or whatever it is. How many of you, when you make a mistake, think, I'm a terrible person? That is a normal response. That happens for a lot of people. It's important to be honest with yourself about that one. Maybe not every time you make a mistake, but the mistakes you don't think you should make. How many of you, when you make a mistake, think, I'm terrible at my job, or I'm terrible at doing this or that? There are a lot of folks who feel that way, too. That's right. No, you're not. From the voices of our children, yes. No, you're not. You are not a bad person, and you are not a bad at what you do. You are, as all people, what?
Human.
Human. I think if I give a sermon over and over, it's probably that one, right? With hope and hope of the season, as we're talking about what it means to be humanist or an atheist in the holidays, is to know that for hope, science and reason doesn't mean that we always know everything, doesn't mean that we always have it exactly right, it doesn't mean that our way is the right way. It means that every time we embrace the universe and make mistakes and live imperfectly, we create more hope for the future. We make the mistakes so they don't have to. They can make different ones. We keep learning over and again. Each week we take some time to remember the joys and the sorrows, the celebrations and the struggles within this community. Each week we take stones from a bowl, either as we enter or as we come forward, representing each of those joys or sorrows in our lives. For those who are more thoughtful, it is a way to bring to consciousness those things that are lifting us up or holding us down. And for those who are more spiritual, it is a way of putting that energy and letting it go. For whatever this ritual means for you, I invite you to come forward and place the stones in a bowl and a ritual of joy and sorrow.
May I be safe, may I be well, may I know joy, may I be free.
Sing as you get it.
May you be safe. May you be well.
Place a stone in the bowl for those joys and sorrows lying in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, and a stone in the bowl for all those who cannot be present with us today. For those new to our community, I invite you, when you hear noise from our youngest, to make it a part of your own silence, to include it into your spiritual life. I invite you now into a time of meditation, prayer, or contemplation. And I invite you to notice the world around you. What do you hear? What do you feel? Notice the pew underneath you, the ground under your feet. Notice the clothes on your skin. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out. And so we can open up our minds and our bodies. I invite you to do it with this sound, breathing in and out. Ooh. And breathing in and out. Ooh. And one more time, in and out. We offer gratitude in this day for all those in our lives, those who remind us how important life is, for our parents and for our children, for our siblings, for our cousins, those estranged and those close to us. We offer blessing to those in times of struggle and pain, fear. May they know that they are not alone, that we each of us experience darkness as the winter comes close to us, that we each of us experience rain, that we each of us experience pain in our own way. In this holiday season, we hold close to us those who have died and those who are not with us for the holiday season. May they live in our lives, but not run them. May they be central to our lives, but not the center. And in this day, we remember those joys and celebrations of beautiful animals, of cats and dogs and rabbits and fish, of large vegetables, and even larger hearts, the gift of all who are gathered here, and for the hope of the world, ever connected and ever opening. I invite you into a brief time of silence.
Thank you.
As we come into this place, I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out, and in and out, and one more time, making that noise in and out. And one last time, in. May we light each other's lives with love and hope in this day and all the days to come. Blessed be and amen. I invite you to join in our sung meditation, Spirit of Life. And now for An Atheist Christmas Carol by Vienna Ting.
Full weight of our burden.
Each week, we participate in a spiritual practice of giving to this community a portion of the financial resources that we receive. We do this with hope that these gifts will bring blessings to the world. We do this with hope that this congregation will bring a message of love to the world. We give financially as we are able, as an act of hope, making our faith, our trust, real in word and deed. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given.
You to join in the offertory words. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these are offerings.
The reading this morning comes from the words of Reverend Curtis Reese, minister of this church from 1913 to 1915, and co-founder of Religious Humanism. Humanism is the conviction that human life is of supreme worth and consequently must be treated as an end, not as a means. This is the basal article of the faith of humanism. So jealous is the humanist of human worth that he insists on regarding it as inherent and not derived from a super world of any sort. Human worth is as native to human life as our finely equipped organisms, delicately balanced impulses, and spiritual urges. In fact, human worth is constituted of these and needs no extraneous addition to make it valid. The humanist insists that human worth is intrinsic to human nature and that its derivation is of an evolutionary character and is one with organic derivation.
Yeah, I love how they used to speak. Organic derivation. It's natural. That's all that means. It's natural. Couldn't we just say that? No. Reverend Curtis Reese. Who can tell me about Reverend Curtis Reese? Anybody know any good stories? There's some good ones. Oh, come on. Kleber loved talking about Reverend Curtis, if I understand correctly. Anybody remember a story of a minister getting chased down the street by a prostitute?
Yes. Yeah.
That's Reverend Curtis. He was only here, a minister here for a couple of years. Does anybody know why? It wasn't safe for him to be here. He was not the only minister of this church, but he was certainly probably one of the most well-known for being called out by the mayor, so much so that the people believed that the mayor was asking them to attack all those who were trying to get rid of the criminal element here in Alton. And I know, some of you are sitting here and like, there was a criminal element in Alton? Year was 1914. The city, by a vote of 2,600, had approved these houses of what some of them called houses of ill repute, or immoral houses is how they were reported in the news. And these were places where gambling was okay, and think about the era, it was where alcohol was available, it's where you could get a prostitute, and there were a few of them. And he succeeded in getting 11 of these individuals caught and closing down 3 of these immoral houses. But he had to live in a different parishioner's home every night so they wouldn't know where he was to attack him and kill him. How many of you would put me up for a night, every night for a whole, you know, couple of years? Why, thank you, Lisa. I know where I can stay. Okay, there's some others. Just in case I catch the ire of the mayor and the criminal element. But here's the thing to know about Curtis Reese. He was also the co-founder of religious humanism. After he left this congregation, he went to a congregation in Iowa, and he began writing. But the thing to know is the whole time he was being chased down the street by prostitutes and living house from house from house, was that he was living his hope of his values, the cornerstone of which is every human being has worth and dignity. Every human being has worth and dignity. What's the children's version of that one? Everybody what? Everybody has worth and dignity. That's pretty basic. And that was a cornerstone. For him, humanism, with its reason and its thoughtfulness, had no place if it did not also have, at its core, the notion that every person had inherent worth and dignity. That was the foundation of humanism. I would occasionally get lost, because not all humanists were Unitarian Universalists. This was the first notion that perhaps you didn't need God to be a faithful person. Now, what does hope, what's one of the translations of hope we talked about this last week? Faith, which also means trust. One of the derivations of faith is trust in someone or something, and hope is a form of that trust. And his hope was in the value of human beings, that every person before us, no matter who they were, had value. And that's saying something for someone who was preaching during World War I, when we were engaging in some of the worst atrocities that humanity has ever engaged in, right? How many of you have hurt someone you love? I'm willing to bet even if you didn't raise your hand, you've accidentally hurt someone you love. We've all done it. Are you any less worthy because you've hurt someone?
No.
No. Going back to what I was saying in the first part of the sermon earlier, if we only focus on the outcome of what we do, we lose track of the road we're on. If we are defined only by the mistakes we make, we may never reach our ultimate destination. Now, how many of you know Myers-Briggs? They have those perceiving folks and judging folks as one of the tests, right? I am a hyper-perceiving person, which is not always the greatest combination with ministry. It is in some ways, but I am not the most organized person, some of you know. I'm not the most timely person. I'm working on it. But as a perceiving person, I tend to go with the flow. I like process. And then there are the folks who are J's. Becky is a J. Mary, definitely a J. A very understanding J, which I like. J's are all about a plan, timelines, goals for success, being organized. There's a way to do things and you should do it. I see some padding of partners going on around here. All right. The truth is we need both. If you get so lost in all the details and doing it exactly right and by a certain deadline and all those sorts of things, you lose track of the road you're on, and you lose track of the opportunities for it not going the way you expect, turning that into a learning experience. And if you're too far into process and just letting everything kind of go, you also may lose track of what you've learned. You need a balance of both. So if you're that hyper-organized person, you need to engage in spiritual practices that just let you go with the flow and fall and fail. And if you are that more perceiving type of person, you need spiritual practices that help you be a little more organized and planning-oriented. We need both. Because when you think about that vegetable experiment, you know, with the big rutabaga and the avocados and all of those things, Holly engaged in an experiment, and she had an organized plan, right? And then she let it off into the universe, up into the sky. And rather than saying her experiment failed, she was left to wonder what happened. And we may not always know the impact of everything that we plan to do. That, for me, is part of the hopefulness. We may not see the good that comes from our worst mistakes. It may not happen. It doesn't mean it isn't there. For all we know, there's some alien out there that is counting on us to screw up so they can live. None of us are perfect. I was realizing I wore my tennis shoes this morning because I was going through life without thinking, perceiving thing to do. We have to stay in tune. You have to be aware. Whereas we've been talking about with the Black Lives Matter movement, the hashtag stay woke. It isn't just about staying present to justice and all the things that we struggle with. It is also about staying present to joy and to hope and to love. So may you go into this season, whether you believe in God or not, whether you believe in Jesus or not, whether you believe in Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Chalukah or whatever it is you do, may you go into this season knowing that ultimately it is about the hope of people living into what's possible despite our greatest plans for each other. May you love one another. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing our hymn of the month, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place. And sing it with joyfulness. Rejoice. For we are here. We are the hope of the world.
We tell our story from deep inside.
I invite you to turn and face your neighbors as Mary extinguishes our chalice. Look about the room. First, I want to mention that Reverend Bill Sasso is here from Carbondale. Reverend, thank you. We're glad to have him here to talk about justice work in Illinois. I invite you to look around the room. Look at the many roads and maps before you. None of them perfect, none of them clearly plannable, all of them filled with hope. Even in the face of struggle, we know not what light may come to us, what may guide us on our way. But for certain, as you look into the eyes and smiles of those around you, know that some of that hope lies between and among you. For you are enough in this day and in all days. May you have a fabulous atheist or Christian or whatever kind of holiday you have. May you know you are enough and that you are blessed. And whenever possible, say yes to life. Yes. Our worship is ended. Let our service begin.